בוקר טוב רבותיי, שבוע טוב, השתבח שמו, ברוך השם. Another day, another week of life. So let's make the best of it, ברוך השם. There's no guarantees, Rabbi. So you wake up in the morning, you have to say, Modeh ani, daven and learn, because you never know when is going to be your last breath. It's really a daf. We saw in yesterday's daf, Masechet Nedarim is a very, very different limud. It's a totally different limud than the rest of Shas. The language of Masechet Nedarim, the Mefarshim of Masechet Nedarim, it's very, very different than the rest of Shas. And the Gemara says, how do you find Balta Akhir? How do you find an Isur to delay Nazirut? The Gemara ends off and says, Shelo ipater min ha'olam b'chei Nazir. He says, I shouldn't leave the world without being a Nazir. Says the Gemara, he becomes a Nazir right away. You know why? The Gemara says, you know, even from the Gemara, you have a lot of Musa. What's the Musa over there? The Gemara says he's Nazir right away. You know why? Because the clock is ticking. You never know when your last moment is. So he becomes a Nazir right away. He says, the last moment before I die, let's say, same thing, the Gemara gives a case. If you have a Kohen who tells his wife, Hareze gitech sha'a achat lifne mitati. This is your get, and it should take effect an hour before I die. Yeah, or a moment before I die. What's the halacha? She's asur to eat truma right away. Why? Because we're afraid maybe he's going to die any moment. So over there, you know, people live life with all sorts of preconceived misconceptions that, you know, people think they're going to live forever. Especially the younger you are, the more you think you're going to live forever. You're healthy, Baruch Hashem, Shtabach Shemo. It's very, life is fickle. You know, fickle, I say fickle in Persian. Yeah. If you can. Yeah, so anyway, Bekitzur, you have to understand. Life, unfortunately, especially this past month or so in Queens, had a lot of tragedies, Bar Minan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps on having to remind us that life is fickle and nobody's got any, you know, guarantees, and nobody has. So you have to make the best mamash of every day. Wake up in the morning, tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Todah Rabbah. This is not a granted. To wake up in the morning and to be able to walk and talk and eat and drink and daven and learn and whatever, that's all mamash chasdei Hashem. Everything is a matana. Od matana ve'od matana ve'od matana ve'od matana. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us endless gifts. Endless gifts. And then we only, unfortunately, sometimes people only realize how great the gift is only when you don't have it anymore. That's life. You only appreciate something when you don't have it anymore. So that being said, Abotai, let's try to justify our existence for another day, another week. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us another day of life, so you got to justify that. So, last week, we started speaking, we spoke about a bunch of different things, but last week we started speaking about the mitzvah of Piriya V'Rivya, which is a wonderful mitzvah. It's the first mitzvah in the Torah, and it's a mitzvah that until Matan Torah really applied to everybody, because guess what? Adam and Rishon wasn't part of Am Yisrael, and neither was Noah. We find the mitzvah Piriya V'Rivya again mentioned in Parashat Noah. As soon as Noah and his children came out of the Teva, even though it was given to him in Bracha format, HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant to tell Noah to continue the Masoret of Adam and Rishon and to procreate, because guess what? The entire world was wiped out. And Hashem gave him a command, a bracha / command, to re-inhabit the world now that it's empty. And therefore, we are all B'nei Noach. We're all now from B'nei Noach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose Am Yisrael to be Am Yisrael, but we're all technically B'nei Noach as well. Now, like we mentioned last week, before Matan Torah, the mitzvah of Piriya V'Rivya applied to everybody. Applied to everybody. There was a mitzvah that applied to everybody to procreate Piriya V'Rivya. At Matan Torah, that mitzvah of Piriya V'Rivya was taken away from the rest of the goyim of the world and given only to Am Yisrael, which answers the question, hey, wait a second, the mitzvah of Piriya V'Rivya was given to Adam and Noah. They weren't even Jews. So how come goyim are not, one of the Sheva mitzvot min Noach is not Piriya V'Rivya? So what's pshat? It used to be, but then at Matan Torah it was taken away and given specifically to Am Yisrael. Now, there are three mitzvot associated with Piriya V'Rivya. One biblical, two rabbinic. Now rabbinic I mean it's learnt out of the Nevi'im and Ketuvim. Now the halacha is that any mitzvot that are learnt out of Nevi'im and Ketuvim are considered rabbinic. It's called mitzvot midivrei sofrim, which is why many poskim, give me an example of a mitzvah that's derived from the Rabbanan, from the Nevi'im and Ketuvim. It's not in the Nevi'im and Ketuvim. That's later. Megillah, right? That's Megillat Esther. It's considered not a mitzvah midoraita, a mitzvah midrabbanan, or even from the Nevi'im. V'karata la Shabbat Oneg, it says in Navi Yeshaya, Yeah, וקראת אם תשיב משמת הרגליך, לעשות חפצך ביום קודשי, וקראת לשבת עונג, that's all a portion from the Navi Yeshaya. Now that, huh? No, that's minhag nevi'im. That's not a mitzvah, that's a minhag. That's why we don't make a bracha on it. That's why the Gemara says, chavit, chavit, vila barich, sukkah, daf amdalet amud alef. So therefore, that being said, we read that, when do we, yes, sukkah, zato. Huh? Tiftach. Wanna? I stand behind everything I say. You're not scaring me. Yeah. Other people, I listen. If I say it, that means I stand behind it. There's plenty of. I said this past week. I gave a. They asked me to come speak in Landers this past Thursday night for the yard site of Maran Zechon Bracha, and I said a very important verse. And I want you to take this before we get back to the halacha. Listen carefully. Maran Zechon Bracha was very into. Sources. Everything was sourced, as you can see. That was his life's everything in his farim. There's nothing that he ever, you know, shot from the hip. This ain't no Wild West. You know what I'm saying? Draw. No. Everything was sourced. Multiple in one paragraph in Yabi Almir and Yichavidah, whatever. You can have in one paragraph. You can have up to 50 sources. Let's say it's unreal. And this is, you know, real, real Amala Torah before Google and before Otzara Chokhmah, before anything. He actually read through and knew these Sfarim by heart in order to quote them. Why was he so into sourcing everything? Okay, we believe you. What's the big... Okay, if he said it, you believe him. No, what does he need to bring sources and sources and sources? Why? Poskim Rishonim, Poskim Acharonim. Why? Let me explain to you.
One person who has a doubt.
I mean, if he has a doubt, so call him and he'll tell him where it is. You have to be so into it. Let me explain to you. This is a huge, huge vart. And I want you to take this with you for the rest of your life. In the Navi Yeshaya, there's a famous pasuk where the Navi says that in the end of days, there's going to be, in terms of Torah, there's going to be a hunger. It says, Hine yamim ba'im neum Hashem, v'shilachti ra'av ba'aretz, lo ra'av lalechem, lo sama lamayim, ki im nishma divrei Hashem. Which means there's going to come a time, and it's meant as musar. There's going to come a time where there's going to be a hunger in the world. This is like tochacha. This is rebuke. There's going to be a hunger in the world for not a physical hunger, but a spiritual hunger to hear the word of Hashem. Hunger and a thirst. Okay, wonderful. And that's one of the simanim of the Mashiach. Everybody's going to be searching, soul searching, and looking for truth. That's wonderful. The Panovich Rav, Alav Hashalom Rav Shlomo Kahanaman, Zecher Tzadik Kadosh Livracha, he asked a very interesting question. He was in the Holocaust, obviously, and he was the one who was responsible for rebuilding the Panovich Yeshiva and dynasty in Bnei Brak. He was one of the earliest visionaries after the war. Everybody thought he was nuts. After the war, rebuilding yeshiva, what are you thinking? Everybody, you know, after the mass exodus from Europe, after the Holocaust, and people started coming in, and people were broken, and yetomim, and whatever. He was busy fundraising and whatever. To rebuild the Panovich Yeshiva. So people used to laugh at him. They said, Rebbe, you're dreaming if you think that you're going to rebuild the Yeshiva. So he told him famously in Yiddish, he says, I may be dreaming, but I'm not sleeping. That was his response. Anyway, and he did it. Anyway, so he was one of the earliest post-war visionaries in Eretz Yisrael. Very close confidant to the Chafetz Chaim. Anyway, so he said, he asked the question, the Navi Yeshaya, why is he saying that there's going to be a hunger, like it's some sort of, you know, rebuke. Well, okay, big deal. So there's going to be a hunger is a good thing. Why? Because that means everybody's hungry and thirsty for Torah. Everybody who, until this generation, didn't care too much. Now you see, Baruch Hashem, it's unbelievable. Spiritual awakenings. Ve'eshiv levavot al banim, ve'lev banim al avotam. In previous generations, fathers had to chase their children in order to be machzir otam b'tshuva. And in this generation, we see, you know, many times exactly the opposite. The children are chasing after their parents to be machzir otam b'tshuva. Very, very weird things. But it seems like a lot of people who otherwise would have shown a great disinterest for Torah and mitzvot are reawakening. So isn't that a wonderful thing? Why does the Navi make it sound like there's something wrong with it? Like there's a rebuke about it? Like there's something, you know, there's something scary about it? What's the big deal? Says the Panovich Rav. He says, let me explain to you. I was in the Holocaust. Yeah, so are my grandparents. I heard this from them. Let me explain to you what hunger means. Baruch Hashem, nobody in this room has ever witnessed or experienced hunger. B'ezrat Hashem, you should never. Now he says, when you see a hunger, let me tell you something, and then I'll come back. My maternal grandparents were Holocaust survivors. My mother's side, they were Romanian. And I remember my grandfather, Alam Shalom Zirtzed, is next week. He, whenever they used to come visit, my grandfather, anytime my brother and I used to sit down to eat whatever breakfast, lunch, dinner, whatever it was, even if he wasn't eating with us, which usually he wouldn't, he would have like a different schedule, but he would always sit at the table and stare at us eating. Always sit and stare. And as a kid, I was uncomfortable. You know, also the Derechetz dictates that the Gemara brings down, Shulchan Aruch brings down, you're not supposed to look at a person while he's eating. So I always felt uncomfortable. And I told my mother, I said, can you tell Saba to like back off a little bit? It's uncomfortable. So she said, I can't. So I said, well, I asked my mother, why not? So she told me that he is traumatized from the horrors of the Holocaust. And part of his nachat is when he sees his children and grandchildren eating, that gives him nachat. So I can't tell him anything. And he used to sit there mamash and watch every bite, and he used to get nervous when we didn't finish. Like he used to mamash, like and so I don't want to finish. Eat, okay? You know, like it comes from a trauma. It's a bar minan. My mother told me when they were younger, they used to. My mother grew up in Trenton, New Jersey. So that's where my
Really?
Yeah.
You're Philly.
Yeah. Well, Nahon, it's right across the Delaware River.
How did the energy lots over there?
Yeah, I mean it used to be a big community, but so she grew up there. That's where they came right after the war. So she grew up there, and she told me, you know where we used to go for field trips? My grandfather used to take my mother and her sister to the supermarket, not because they necessarily needed to shop, but as a field trip, they used to walk up and down the aisles of the supermarket just to look at the food and the drinks and the fruits and the vegetables and the shefa, and that used to give my grandfather chizuk. It was like a big thing. We can't really relate to it because we didn't go through those things. But for people who went through hunger, you know what hunger not only messes with your body, it messes with your head. So back to the Panovichurav, he says, I went through hunger. Let me explain to you what happens when you're in hunger. When there's a hunger and you find food on the floor or in the garbage or whatever it is, you don't discriminate between good and bad, healthy, unhealthy, you know, nutritional, junk, whatever it is, you eat it because there's a hunger. He says, that's what the Navi meant to say will happen during the end of days. There's going to be such a hunger for Torah and mitzvot, for spirituality, and people don't have a background to discriminate ben kodesh lechol, ben emet lesheker. Whatever you give them, they'll eat. It could be the biggest junk, fake news, garbage, that whatever, but they'll consume it, they'll inhale it because there's a hunger. What does that mean? Perfect, look today. Anybody, any Joe Schmo who wants to be, you know, instant celebrity YouTube rabbis. You know those? Duh! And all you need to say is the biggest shtuyot, and the more, you know, the more spectacular things you say, and if you predict stuff and whatever, wow, and you start getting a lot of followers and the thumbs up, you know, the thumbs. What's that? That's the...
Like,
yeah.
They have the power of his speech.
Yeah, and then now he becomes the YouTube Gdolador. Yeah, the Gdolador of YouTube. And the Gdolador of the Internet. Baruch Hashem, Rabban shel kol b'nei ha-Internet. He becomes that. So now, and people take it. And people, wow, but the Rav said this. It's a Rav, there's an A'alayim. Huh?
Donate here.
Nah, Zov, donate here. The point is, people are so, in this generation, they're so misled. And there's no way for you to tell them otherwise, because but he said he's on the screen. You see, he's on the screen. That means that,
huh?
Even goats have beards. Goats have nicer beards than many people. You should know. Yafed, you know. And there's a song in Hebrew. Yesh lanu ta'ish la ta'ish zakan. Right? Goats have beautiful beards also. Yeah, rabotai.
It's very. Anyone is a rabbi today.
Huh?
Anyone is a rabbi. They don't have the background. Excluded.
Today, especially, you have to know everybody. Anybody today who used to be something in non-religious life or whatever, so he had money or he was a celebrity, and then he's chozer b'tshuva, haraba gaon, because he's chozer b'tshuva. Okay, I guess, you know, that's Maran Tchon Berchai used to mock it. He used to call this tkufat ha-geonim. Gaonim was really after Chatimat HaTalmud. There was the Gaonim of Haigaon, of Shagaon. After the Chatimat HaTalmud, after the Shas was concluded, there was a generation, actually two generations after the Talmud was finished. It was called the Gaonim. He used to joke and call this generation the period of the Gaonim. Why? Because when they write, everybody's Gaon, 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 Gaon. Hagaon zeh, Gaon. It's cheapening the term. He used to laugh at it. He says, well, everybody today, kulam Gaonim. Everybody's kulam. Everybody's Gaonim. Aye, that's dangerous. Because there's plenty of people in Am Yisrael that don't have the background to make Havdalah. You know, just like you make Havdalah on Motzei Shabbat, you have to know how to make Havdalah in everything in life. Havdalah is a very important thing. The Talmud Yerushalmi in Masechet Brachot asks, where in Tfilat Motzei Shabbat do we say Havdalah? Which bracha? Atachonen. Atachonen. Why over there? Why not Hashiva Shoftenu? Why over there? Says the Gemara in Yerushalmi, he says, Beli Chokhmah Havdalah Minayin. If you don't have Chokhmah, how are you supposed to make Havdalah? In order to make Havdalah, in order to make that separation, in order to make that, to discriminate between Ben Kodesh Lechol, to differentiate, you need Chokhmah. That's something that's severely, severely lacking in this generation. There's plenty of people that just latch onto any intellectual or religious junk food that people spew, and that's what, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, that's where they fall in this generation. Sometimes, even in Maran Zichron Bracha's life, Maran Zichron Bracha, it's still within a few days of his yahrzeit, so we'll say Maran Zichron Bracha also was very... It hurts to say it, he was also politically involved, because even when he was politically involved, he wasn't involved in politics. He was involved in Hatzalat Am Yisrael in any way he felt possible. That's why he started his Shas party, whatever. So there were, I remember, a few years before his passing, there are a few other, you know, beards that decided to pop up, and beards and antennas that decided to pop up against him and start their own party and fight against him. And there were people, idiots, that were legitimately confused. They said, you know, in Hebrew, in Israel, like, wow, Arav Ovadia omer kacha, aval Arav Ploni omer kacha, ani lo yodea ma la'asot. Yeah, are you stupid? You're an idiot. They make like machloket, Maran Zichron Lebracha, and beards. You know what I'm saying? Oh, wow, psh, wow, that's a great machlok.
And a lot of people don't know.
The point,
these rallies and these rallies they have in the city, I've seen recently, but they're in the courtyards on the sides. So you have non-religious Jews or goyim walking, and they see the beards, and they're holding up.
I'm not even talking about non-religious. I'm talking about supposedly religious people,
like,
and Baalei Tshuva and what? Huh? Wow! And that, do you really think in your brain that is that like a legitimate machloket in your mind, like machloket between, meaning a Torahic machloket between Maran Zichron Lebracha, Amud HaOlam, and like, you know, facial hair? What is, huh? Lam Shane, what exactly are you thinking? Anyway, Mikol Makom, overgrown facial hair. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Rabotai, listen carefully. We live in a generation of confusion and hunger. There's hunger, which is a wonderful thing, because people are hungry to hear the word of Hashem. The only problem is there's a lot of klipot, a lot of sitra achara, that take advantage of people's naivete and people's lack of knowledge and people's lack of background. A person with a strong Torah background, he went to yeshivas and he has a derech and he has rebbeim. He understands, he knows how to be mavdil ben kodesh lachol, ben ol lechoshech, ben yisrael amin. He understands. But there's other people, unfortunately, that don't understand. That's what Maran Zichron Lebracha came to instill. There's only one party. That was a big thing. And people take advantage of these things. I'm not even talking about from a socio-political perspective. I'm talking about from a halachic perspective too. Yeah, Maran Zichron Lebracha gave a psak. And then some other, you know, beard or schnook or whatever comes and disagrees. People, wow, it's machloket aposkim. Uh-huh. Really? You have what I'm saying? You have to understand that what are you comparing? Gdolei Olam. Gdolei Olam, when Maran Zichron Lebracha was in his 20s and 30s, used to completely negate and subjugate themselves to his halachic expertise, and they would not dare speak in front of him. Do you know that there was a rule? Maran Zichron Lebracha, shortly after he got married, he learned in a kolo of a Gaon of Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim. He was Ashkenazi, Gaon Gadol. And he learned there with other gedolim in the kol of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Shlomo Rozovsky. Many other gedolim were in that kol. Do you know that the Har Tzvi, the Rosh Kol, made a rule? Ashkenazim in Yerushalayim of old, they didn't speak Hebrew. They spoke Yiddish among themselves. They made a rule that when Chaim Ovadia was around in the kol, they couldn't speak Yiddish. They weren't allowed to. Only Ivrit. Why? He shouldn't feel excluded or left out even for one moment.
Huh?
He didn't speak Yiddish, no. Yeah, he knew Hebrew and Arabic. That's all he knew. Hebrew because of Hebrew and Arabic because he was Iraqi. So that's what that's what his parents spoke. So that being said, they made such a rule because and people they were a little bit bent out of shape about it. The Avrachim and the Kol, like especially back then, a Sfardi coming and making shit. The Har Tzvi, the Rosh Kol, said that's the rule. You don't like it, get out. That's the new rule. In his I would have been fine. Yeah. No, but Maran Zichron Berachah didn't have any exposure to you. When did he ever have any exposure to Yiddish? So that was the rule. He says you don't speak Yiddish in his presence to chas v'shalom not make him feel even for a moment excluded. He's got to understand you, and you want him to understand you so he can correct you. Very big. Yeah. Maze? Well, the truth is, I'll tell you the truth. He had a very, very soft spot in his heart for Persians, for Persian Jews. I'll tell you why. In his teens, when he started giving shiurim, he got a lot of flack from his own Aida members, from his fellow Iraqis. They gave him a lot, big hard time for a large chunk of his life. He even got sick over it, big stuff, because, historically, and even in the Sfarim, he disagreed halachically with the Ben Ish Chai a lot, that we know. And the Iraqis didn't take that too kindly, whatever. So he got a lot of chizuk from his Rashiv and Rebbeim and Purat Yosef, who told him to continue B'derech Shel Kavod, whatever, which is what he did. But when he started giving shiurim, the people who most gave him a forum to give him that opportunity to give them shiurim and stuff was new olim from Iran. They came, the new immigrants from Iran, they came to Yerushalayim. And they're working folks, regular, they weren't such a big goni. Even we can call them Ami Haaretz. And they came after a long day of work. They used to come every night just to show him kavod. And he used to give them a shiur and give them and be mashpia a little bit halacha, a little bit gemara, a little bit of musar. And he was mashpia on them. Over there, in those days, it was not at all a given to send your kids to yeshiva. They went, for a few years, and then they used to go to the army, work, whatever it was. And he convinced them very much to send their kids to yeshiva, to Porat Yosef, and they listened, and Gdolei Olam Mamash came from these families. Many, many, I can tell you names, I don't want to chas v'shalom slight their kavod, of these Persian families, these immigrants, that Maran Zichron Berachah was mashpia, and by teaching the parents and having and impressing upon them the importance of sending their kids to yeshiva, Gdolei Olam used to come out. So they loved him very much, and he was always very appreciative to that community for giving that opportunity and chizuk in the beginning to be able to. That's why when he was older, and his most world renowned famous shiur of the week was obviously his shiur shel Motzei Shabbat, which was funny because that, of all the shiurim that he gave, that was the least. The least intense, because it was a shiur that was meant for. There were many Talmid Chachamim that attended the shiur, but the shiur in general, the style was meant for the amcha. For everybody, for Talmid Chachamim, laymen, Ami Haaretz. Everybody used to come and enjoy, and used to take the most complicated halachic ideas and kind of dumb it down so everybody could hear. And people would leave and say, "Wow, he wanted to give everybody an opportunity to leave the shiur and say, and take a bits and pieces." Yeshiva say, "Oh wow, machloket Beit Yosef and Bach." He exposed them to a little bit of halacha, and then he gave them parashat haShavua, and he would make jokes and tell stories and say stuff in Arabic, and people used to. He gave a lot of people a lot of chizuk. He had an opportunity to give that shiur wherever he wanted. He could have given it in Bet Knesset Gadol. He could have given it in any shul or any stadium that he wanted. He chose Bet Davka. Where did he give the shiur until his last years when he couldn't anymore and he had to stay home? He gave him Bet Knesset Yazdim in the Yazdi shul in Yerushalayim in the Shechonat HaBukharim. Bet Davka, because he said, as Hakarat HaTov to the Persian, I don't think it was only Yazdim back then, but as Hakarat HaTov to the Persian community. He says, I want to give back to them because they helped me start out on my journey as Hakarat HaTov. So he was always very, very much Makir Tova to them until Mamash. And now his son also, Agon Bitchak, also now he can, where does he give a shir? Also in the same place, also yeah, just to, in the Yazdim, yeah. In order to... Motzei Shabbat. He continues that same thing. As you see, it comes from a place of love and Hakarat HaTov that he did that. So it was a very big thing. Yeah.
What's the Rav's opinion? There's some speakers that
I love the word speakers. Yeah. So we have to first thing, even before you ask your question, you have to do havdalah, especially in this generation, between Rabbanim, Poskim, and speakers, inspirational speakers. Prophetic speakers, you know, all sorts of. You have to make havdalah. Okay, continue.
So, yeah. There's some speakers that seem to have a lot of success in large quantities.
Top.
And you have other rabbis that, not so many people, but the quality is much better in the way they transfer the information to the people so they can grow as well. Mm-hmm. What's the Rav's opinion in terms of which one a person should listen to in our times today?
Well, I mean, listen, let's put it this way. What's it better to be, a tailor or a lawyer? No. I mean, you know, different strokes for different folks. Everybody's got their own, you know. A lawyer might make more money, but a tailor might have less stress and, you know, it's lahavdil elef hafavdalot. It works like that in Torah also. Let's assume for a moment we're talking about legitimate inspirational speakers. I have nothing against speakers, don't get me wrong. I love No, speakers are great, as long as they're saying the right thing, as long as they're saying things that are true to the Torah Kedosha and Emunah and Kadosh Baruch Hu. But seems to be a popular line of business today. You know what I'm saying? It's wonderful. You get to speak for 45 minutes. You make, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 for, you know, probably not more than 10,000 words. So it's seems to be a good line of business. But what? There's different things. You know what I'm saying? Let's put it this way. You know, Maran Zichron Bracha wasn't a speaker. He spoke, he gave shiurim, but it wouldn't do him justice to classify him as a speaker. He was Gdol Ador. In his capacity of being Gdol Ador, he wrote, he spoke, he gave shiurim. Now, some of the shiurim he gave were on very high levels. Some of the shiurim that he gave were on lower levels. Now, by the way, that in and of itself is a tremendous talent, because usually the more brilliant you are, the more difficult it is for you to limit yourself and bring down your level. Usually geniuses, I happen to know a lot of geniuses. In general, geniuses have a very, very hard time relating to regular people, common folks. And they have a hard time relating to other geniuses as well. The bigger genius you are, your mind works fast, you talk fast, you think fast, you get frustrated when people don't understand as quickly as you. You know what I'm saying? So it's a very... Being a genius is kind of, it's a blessing, but it's also, I know many geniuses that are antisocial because of that. Plenty. You know, it just happens. To be a genius and to be able to connect to all levels of society is a huge bracha. And that, it doesn't happen a lot. Maran Zichron Bracha was able to do that in a wonderful way. So that's one of the brachot, and the talents that he had was being able to do that. So it's important, but it's also important to realize that not what happens is, even among legitimate speakers, let's call them legitimate versus illegitimate. Now sometimes the lines are blurred. You ever heard the expression, stay in your lane? Stay in your lane. Sometimes, even among popular speakers, I'm not talking about whatever, but you're a speaker, and you're an inspirational speaker, which means you're supposed to give people inspiration. Stick to that. Meaning sometimes, even these inspirational speakers who we'll call legitimate, sometimes they exit their lane and enter territory that they're not supposed to, which means dabbling with halachic issues, dabbling with Shkafa issues, or things that they shouldn't be dabbling in. That's not your thing. You know, in Torah, I said this by the Siyam on Thursday night, in life, you're entitled to your opinion. In Torah, you're not entitled to your own opinion. You're entitled only to Hashem's opinion. So if it's not your thing, if you're a speaker or an inspirational speaker, speak and inspire and go home. don't paskin shailas and don't weigh in on hashkafic issues that are really meant for gdolim, or don't offer, you know, your opinion on things. Everybody's got their own things. Just like, you know what I'm saying, many poskim don't dabble in inspirational speaking, you know what I'm saying? That's just not their thing. They leave the inspirational speaking to the inspirational speakers, you know what I'm saying? And they deal with their expertise. So everybody's got to stay in their own lane. Now again, sometimes you'll have an inspirational speaker who's also a posek or a hashkafist, or I don't know how to really break it. That's, again, it happens, huh? But well, whatever it is, everybody's got to know their boundaries. Everybody's got to know their boundaries, and sometimes, especially because of the stardom, the fame, people sometimes lose sight of what they're supposed to be focusing on. You know what I'm saying? Speak, inspire, zil. Don't paskin shailas and what. And I've heard many times people offering some of these inspirational speakers offering halachic advice or guidance or opinions on halacha. They're just nutty. Shit b'shiket. Just don't say anything. You know what I'm saying? Until now, you're saying good. You're inspiring and great. That's all. And even if it's fluffy, people like fluff. It's all wonderful. But once you start kind of, you know, traversing out of your lane, you shouldn't really be doing that. Yeah, especially if you don't have... A lot of these people are homegrown. Yeah, you have to know. And anytime you want to talk to somebody in halakha or hashkafa or guidance or whatever, every Rav or Rebbe, just like anybody else in Am Yisrael is based on Mesorah, is based on tradition, is based on a chain, an unbroken chain of father to son, Rebbe to Talmid, all the way up to Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Hashalom. And everybody's got to justify their own personal Mesorah, their own personal Shoshelet, their own personal chain. So before you go to talk to anybody, first question always, just like you go to, you know, a doctor or a lawyer or whatever, you want to see the diplomas on the wall, where did he study, who vouches for him, nachon? It's no different. Again, you're not asking Rabbanim for their diplomas necessarily. You want to know who's your Rebbe? Who are you mekabin from? Who did you learn under? Many of these people are just, you know, I'm not saying many, but there are some of these speakers that are mushrooms after the rain. They just, you know, it rains and then poof, right after the rain, makore, sprout. Hey, where'd you come from? Yeah, who's... On what basis do you have to speak? Who's your Rebbe? Who vouches for you? And many times, there's not a clear answer. There's a photo op with this Rav and this Gadol. Photo ops mean nothing. Nothing. Achrayut means everything. Just like in... What is a smicha? What is a ketav smicha that a Rav has? What's a ketav smicha? The Rabbanim who signed the smicha say... not on every single thing, and sometimes a person can lose his credibility, but in general, what does a ketav smicha mean? It means that the Rabbanim who are signed on that say that in this and this and this areas of halacha, we vouch for his decisions because he's shown to be proficient in these areas, and he's shown to have Yirat Shamayim, he's been with us, we know him. There's got to be some sort of trust and honor system, just like there is lehavdin enef rafei avdalot in the secular world. Don't think, a person who's giving, you know, if you're just an inspirational speaker, okay, fine, you know, talk. As long as you're not saying, you know, things that are against the Torah, tfaddan, go ahead. But if you're saying things that already, you know, halachot, or, you know, paskining shailas, or offering things on hashkafa, offering your opinions on monumental Jewish events, or, you know, all sorts of stuff like that, hold on a second. Pause. On what basis are you speaking? Who vouches for what you are saying? Who's your Rebbe? Yeah? Who's your Rebbe?
Is that rude to ask
a Rebbe? Huh? Absolutely not. Why is it rude? Why is it rude? Yeah? I have multiple Rebbe. I have no problem telling you. When you go to a doctor, anytime you go to a doctor, you're not going to ask him to his face, but you're going to look at... you're going to... In Vital, I forgot what it's called... all sorts of websites where you can vet a doctor, whatever, you can see where did he go to med school, where did he do his residencies, where did he, what certifications does he have? You do your research before. Is it rude to do research? Is it rude to, you know, before you need to go to a specialist to deal with something that's very, very serious? Is that rude? Why don't you just trust him? Yeah, just trust him. Trust, baba. Akol beseder. Why? Anytime you buy a car, is it rude to check the Carfax? Anytime you buy a house, is it rude to send the home inspector? Is that rude?
Why is it? Like very forward.
Huh?
I just feel like it's forward.
Is it forward before you buy a house to send the home inspector?
That's why I'm going to start asking
Rabbi. Okay, now. Now. No, I'm just saying. I'm just,
the way
Rabbi. Again, now.
Then how do we know the other rabbis?
Again, there's certain, like there's a Mishnah in Masechet Kiddushin, in Bodkin min Mizbeach Ulma'ala. There's certain, which means once you get to a certain Rav, once you get to a certain level, then you understand certain, you know what I'm saying? No research needed anymore. You understand that they're Muchzakim. But it's certainly, again, you don't have to sit down, you know, you're asking a Rav for help or a Shiloh or whatever. Sit down, you know, interrogation, you know what I'm saying? That, you know, FBI, we're going to start interrogating, show me your smichot, yeah, who signed, is it still, you have to know, but, you know, a real Rav or a real Rebbe or whatever, something like that, person who's offering halachic guidance or ashkafic guidance or you know, any kind of, in the realm of spirituality, should be easily able to answer, my Rebbeim are X, Y, and Z, and they vouch for me. And I've seen this many times that I've had issues with certain things that certain rabbanim say, and I ask, first thing to ask, who's your rebbe? Where'd you learn? Sometimes the answer is, well, he was chozer b'tshuva. Well, being chozer b'tshuva does not qualify you as a rav. That's first of all. People think in this generation, let's say a guy was very famous or very rich or whatever in his non-religious past life, and then he saw the light and he was chozer b'tshuva and grew a beard. Wow! Now he's entitled to an opinion. No. Now he's not entitled to anything. He was chozer b'tshuva, ashrecha, welcome back, we love you, whatever. But you still need to learn for many years. You still need to have a rebbe. You need to ask shaylos. You need to be guided, just like anybody else. You think there's a shortcut? You think there are freebies because you were famous in your past life and now you're chozer b'tshuva? It doesn't entitle you to anything. You understand what I'm saying?
Is it the shiur of someone who, let's say, didn't have a bunch of shiur background?
No.
He speaks nicely.
Yeah.
And he truly says nicely.
What's he saying?
It's nothing against him, but the guy, let's say, the shiur of Hashem, the guy maybe, according to some, stole, did wrong.
Was he chozer b'tshuva?
Not just a chozer b'tshuva, but he doesn't have a very traditional background. So can you listen to this such a person?
Tell me what not to do.
Can you listen to that person?
Sounds very shady.
No, how are you allowed to listen to such a person with not such a good background and the odd things?
Well, is he still associated with the underworld? Or like, what's...
Someone
what?
Like Jordan Peterson, like a non-Jew, but he just like gives like good... Like he gives like nice things, like nice thoughts.
What's nice thoughts? What is he talking about? Unicorns, pots of gold, rainbow. What does he talk about? You know what I'm saying? Baba Jung, you have to understand. Even by the goyim, even if a person's a nice public speaker by goyim, many times I've heard it myself. Many times they start off nice with psychology and self empowerment, and you can do this. You can be your own boss, and you've got the power. You know, they love it, and then they start veering off to Avodah Zarah and Kfira and Zachin and whatever.
I know some rabbis that motivational speakers that call these goyim motivational speakers.
Beards. Anyway, Bikitsur.
Not even beards.
They don't have beards. Yeah. We don't do that. We don't blacklist anybody. You know what I'm saying? There's no whitelist and blacklist, but everybody's got their own Rebbe, and you can ask privately, huh? Because that's not how Am Yisrael works. Am Yisrael doesn't work as, you know, fear-mongering and hit-listing and whatever. That's not... No one's put... You put a... It's your... Again, who's they? Nobody, you know, the Rabbanim didn't go up there and say, okay guys, listen to X, Y, and Z. I'm saying nobody said that. Therefore, a person has a Rebbe, you probably go over to your Rebbe. Rebbe, what do you think about this and this and this? Sometimes the Rebbe won't know. He says, I don't ever heard of him. Ask somebody who knows. So, privately, that's how these things are done. Judaism does not believe, that's another thing, Judaism does not believe in fear-mongering and, you know, anybody who does that, you're all going to go to Gehinnom and everyone's going to burn to death and everyone's, unless you listen to me, and if you don't listen to me, you're all dead. And that's not Judaism, you know what I'm saying? That's ISIS. That's not...
There's people like that who are very successful, who bring people back to the religion by the hundreds, by the thousands.
Mm-hmm.
They get out there and they say, you don't do X, Y, and Z, you're going to burn in hell.
So you're going to come back.
Yeah.
So how do we define that? Because first of all, that's not healthy. By any means, I don't think that's really healthy.
No, it's not healthy.
Yeah. It really...
Because the ritual is back to Judaism by saying you're going to
why not?
Burn
out. Yeah, but that's only way some people come back.
I'm not going to listen. I'm not going to weigh in on certain shitot and
no, it's not everything you're going to burn.
Of course you're going to burn out.
But that's not, but you don't come back to Judaism on the
premise
that you're going to burn it out.
Why not?
But some people
do. Some people
like that.
Listen, there are various methods. There are various methods to be chozer b'tshuva. Not gonna tell you. Not different different strokes work for different folks. I'm just telling you in general, the way of Gdolei Yisrael was never to get up there and blast people to death and you're all gonna. It's not the derech Noam, and you have to explain the Torah as it is to people sweetly. Not to fluff everything up and yeah. By the way, Hashem does love us. Yeah, Hashem really. Yeah, Hashem does love us. That's again not like fluffy everything. Hashem.
There's people that say, do whatever you want. Hashem loves you.
No, that's kfira. That's kfira. That's no. Whoever says do whatever you want, Hashem loves you and He'll always take you back. That's kfira.
Nobody said
that's,
do whatever you want. They just said whatever you did, Hashem will take you back. And nobody said do whatever you want and then come back.
Yeah, that's I don't know. I haven't heard all the all the speakers, but. What I'm trying to say is, just like in any other aspect of life, everybody needs a Rebbe. I'm not even talking about a family Rebbe. You need a Rebbe to guide you, not only for Shailas, obvious, not only for She'elot and for Hashkafa and for Hadracha, for consultation. Who is your Rebbe? Yeah, who's your daddy? Who's your Rebbe? Who's your Rebbe? Who can vouch for you? Is there anybody that, and like I was saying before, many times, like I told you, I've heard speakers saying nutty things, veering out of their lane and saying nutty things. First thing, who's your Rebbe? Well, who's your Rebbe? Yeah, it says Rabbi Ploni. So, okay, I happen to know Rabbi Ploni. I'll call him. Shalom Aleichem. No. Bikitzur, because then it's very easy to reverse, search for these things. So I'm not going to be pulled into that trap. But I know. For me, it is. Well, nutty means if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. You know what I'm saying? If it sounds nutty and it smells nutty, then it's nutty. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. It could be in halakha, it could be in hashkafa. Sometimes people say weird things. The internet is full of garbage, you know what I'm saying? So now... To do what? No, one second. No. No. What? One second. No. Anyway, whatever. Rabotai. One second. Rabbi, please stay with me. So I've called the rabbin before and said, oh, shalom aleichem. Shmooz. So... I've heard X, Y, and Z is supposedly a talmid of yours. Well, I wouldn't exactly call him a talmid. He's spoken to me once. He's taken some pictures with me. So he's not your talmid? No, whatever. Because why are you asking? Well, really, he's touting you as his rebbe, and did he say something? Or yeah, he said X, Y, and Z. What? And he says that you're his Rebbe, and everything that he says is he gets, Mapitom, go tell people that that's not the case. Oh, shalom. So that, many times these things are, sometimes you have to be brave enough to call people's bluffs. For a person, for real Rav, to be brave, he has to know, yeah, I have a Rebbe, and call him, and whatever. And I speak to my Rebbe X amount of times per month, per week, on Yodama, and he can vouch for me for what I say. That's a person who has gvura. That's a courageous person. It works like that, and You have to. It works like that for halacha. You know, you're not just going to go over to any Joe Schmo. If you want to choose, I'm just giving you an example. You want to choose a posek for yourself. It's very important for every family to have a rav, to have a posek, because things happen in Jewish life, in the Jewish family, in the context of, you know, marriage and children and what things happen, and you need to have a rav. And that's not news. Everybody needs. So before you pick a rav, it's okay to vet that rav. Right. Let's say you have if you know him and his reputation precedes him, that's wonderful. And if you're not so, you don't know him so well, so it's okay to vet him. It's okay to do some research, either to ask other people or to ask him himself. Is it okay if I ask the Rav where he, you know, where did the Rav learn and who's the Rav's Rebbeim and who does the Rav, you know, what is the Rav's areas of expertise and things? That's okay. It's a legitimate question, just like any other. If you see a person being very defensive, oh, you can't ask that. Anytime, just as an example in life, if you ask a legitimate question and a person gets defensive about your legitimate questions, psychology dictates that what?
You're right.
You're hitting a button.
Like, just like I've had a Talmid that came to me this week and he asked me, he says, you know, I called a certain food establishment, he wanted to order, or the yeshiva wanted to order, and I just started asking the mashgiach some very simple questions about, you know, about companies and Yashan and stuff like that. And the Mashgiach flipped out. Everything's Chalak and everything's Bet Yosef and everything's Yashan. Why are you asking? Don't you?
They get 1,000 phone calls. They can't sit there every time. Okay, I'm going to go through.
Like you ever do real estate? You do real estate?
Yeah.
What happens if a broker gets 1,000,000 phone calls about a property and he starts flipping out at the... No, I'm asking you a question. If a broker gets 1,000 phone calls about a property and he answers like that, what happens? I'm saying, what? Do you understand what I'm saying?
The Mashiach doesn't necessarily have that flexibility to sit on the phone.
Doesn't have to sit on the phone. Well, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. I'm not even saying, according to the Torah also, but according to psychology, that's a huge red flag. Whoa, why are you getting defensive? Why are you asking? Sometimes also, I mean, in medicine, it's a little bit different. In medicine, it can show ga'ava. Sometimes if you ask the doctor, but what about this, what about that, could it be this, could it be that? Sometimes doctors get very nervous because they see that you're doing research on Google, and they don't like that. When you walk into doctors and you already pre-diagnosed yourself based on Google, WebMD, or whatever, and then you come to the doctor, what about this, what about that? They flip out. Ooh, many times it comes from ga'ava. Why? Because there's information out there. You're not entitled to any information because you didn't go to med school for 25 years. You know what I'm saying? No. It's my body, my health. I'm entitled to know. Well, yeah, I know. But one second. So he says, again, you have to know there's got to be a legitimate... Yeah, there's got to be a balance. You know, it's not right to come to a doctor is not a prescription machine either. So that's not. One second.
I heard at med school, I heard that 5 hours of sleep a night is a good night.
Now he says, that being said, Rabotai, it's important to realize it's okay to vet and it's okay to ask questions. You have to really, really. You know, we're in a generation, we're in the, you know, in the celebrity generation. So not everybody that speaks, and not chas v'shalom, invalidating the legitimate ones. And there's plenty of legitimate ones, and that's wonderful. And a lot of them are machzir people b'tshuva and expose them to Torah that they otherwise wouldn't be exposed to. But, you know, just like there's a lot of nutritional speakers out there, there's a lot of junk food speakers out there also. You have to understand. With zero nutritional value. Yeah? What are you saying?
I don't see much here, but definitely when I was learning in Israel, mm-hmm. in high school,
yeah.
The rabbanim or the atmosphere in Israel, the Haredi world,
mm-hmm.
I know you're talking about people of rabbis who say naughty things. How about rabbis who let's say, are, you know, you have the Haredi spectrum, and then you have a more modern spectrum. When I was in Israel, I wanted to say, don't listen to rabbis who tell you to go to college, don't listen to rabbis in NYU, stuff like that. I understand, both are Orthodox, or maybe not.
You're killing me. But anyway, listen.
Can you listen to a rabbi who's pro-college or...
You're asking very, very vague very vague questions and very, very abstract questions that it's very difficult to answer on the spot. And it depends what they're saying and how they're saying it, just like anything else. It's very important to have, again, if you're misupak, you don't want to listen to things that make you nuts. I know people, listen carefully, Rabotai, I know people that have fallen in love with certain beards on the internet, and as a result, they became so attached and infatuated with these speakers that they started doing nutty things and entered like a cult-like mentality, and as a result, they left their wives and children because of all sorts of, you know, hysterical things. These things can get dangerous. People don't hop until you're sucked in. You know what I'm saying? That's not Judaism. I know. I got you. Get a Rebbe, Baba Jun, and ask the Rebbe, listen, this. I enjoy listening to him. What do you think about this? Now, you know, again, the Rebbe will help you make the call and tell you, you know, vet the person. That's it. That's basically it. Now, oi, Rabotai. Oi. I need... No, I'm good. Thank you. So
you write her also.
No, 1 second. So we'll talk afterwards. Bezat Hashem. I like Yekipa. So that being said, it's very, very important. I'm telling you this on the Motza'ei Yortzeit of Moran Zichrono Livracha, because we're in a generation, Baruch Hashem, you have exposure to real Talmidei Chachamim and real Gdolei Torah and people who have been there and done that, people who have seen and studied under and received guidance from real Gdolei Yisrael. So that's something that in and of itself, you are at a tremendous advantage over other people. So that's, you have to know. And people, many people don't have that zechut. Many people learn under people who are just, you know, who don't have that thing. And they you don't know how far-reaching these effects can be. It can mess up a person's head. It can mess up a person's household, marriage, children, all sorts of things, because a person doesn't have, just like anything else, if you go into any lehavdin, if you go into any, you know, any line of business, or, you know, whether it's law or medicine, or whatever, and you don't have the proper credentials, you don't have the proper education, you don't have the proper training, you are going to mess up not only yourself, but you're going to mess up anybody that you take along for the ride, correct? That's why there's a certification system. What does that mean?
It did not bothersome for the rabbi to constantly ask me, can I do this?
That's another thing. In people think.
Some people don't do it because they just don't want to bother.
People think, and that's another farce in Judaism, that if you have a rebbe, or if you have a rav, or if you have a moreh derech, a guide, or whatever, you have to ask him every single thing that happens from modeani until kriyat shema anam nitam. You know. Rebbe, which direction of the wind, according to Kabbalah, is it appropriate to sneeze at? You know what I'm saying? Which according to the sod, which toenail am I supposed to, you know, when I'm cutting my toenails, which direction am I supposed to face? You know, according to. But no, don't worry about me. And, you don't have to worry about bothering me, because if I can't answer, I don't. That's it. You know what I'm saying? There's everybody's got to have their boundaries. But 1 second. So now, that being said, during COVID or after COVID? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So Rabotai, I remember in the beginning of COVID, when people used to sneeze or cough, it used to be like chemical warfare. Mamash, people used to freak out. Somebody sneezed in the shul, or somebody sneezed in the... What? The place used to empty out. It used to be a very scary thing. Mikol makom, Judaism does not dictate calling the Rav or asking the Rav about every... That's called mind control. That's called a cult. That's called forfeiting your brain to somebody else and having him call the shots. Judaism doesn't require you having a lobotomy to forfeit your brain to somebody else. That's not Judaism. That's cultish. You don't have to ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you a brain, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Judaism highly encourages everyone to use their own brain, their own judgment, chokhmah bina vadat. Sometimes you're at a crossroads. Yeah, sometimes you're at a crossroads. You don't know. You have a halachic question that you genuinely don't know the answer to. You have a hashkafic or, you know, something that requires a consultation that you genuinely don't know the answer to. So you call the Rav, you call the Rebbe, you come to meet him, and you ask him his... And even when you do that, you have to steer clear of people that tell you, do this, do that. You know, it doesn't, you know, in Judaism, unless you're mamash one gedolei hador, Judaism doesn't work that way either. My Rebbe doesn't tell me, you have to do this, you have to do that. Just like any other Rebbe, he gives you advice. He gives you advice. He says, it seems to me, based on the picture that you're painting me, I'm not talking about psak halacha. Psak halacha is mutar asur. Chayav, you know, that's halacha. But I'm saying in terms of guidance, it seems like this should, you know, this is what I would do, but it's your choice. Nobody ever tries to control anybody, suck anybody in, make decisions for... What are you taking people's decision-making, you know, powers away from them? That's not what the Torah believes in. You give an aitzah, let the person use his chokhmah. You can guide him. Nobody's supposed to be making decisions for you. That's another red flag. There's a lot of things that I'm telling you here today. Maybe you should listen to it again. A lot of things that, unfortunately, people get mistaken ideas of what da'at Torah and what... You know, consultations and having a Rebbe and a Rav means in halacha. It doesn't mean that if you call a Rav for a psak halacha and he tells you asur, well, yeah, no, Hashem still gave me a brain and I can decide. No, but obviously that's not the way it works. Yeah, if you call the Rav and he asked Hashem, he said asur. But if we're talking about guidance, we're talking about advice, we're talking about things like that, it's not, you know, there's no, Judaism doesn't believe in mind control. You know what I'm saying? There's no mind control in Judaism. Yeah?
Could you have two go-to rabbis? But you have more than one, Atzilah HaRav.
Yeah, it depends for what? Depends. You can have one kind of Rav that you ask your shaylos to, Rav Posek. Then you can have another kind of Rav that who's a Rebbe and he's, you know, he has for hashkafot and for advice and for stuff. That's perfectly fine. That's not an issue. Yeah, whatever it is. Could be.
What if you disagree on something?
What do you mean?
Like you ask two rabbis the same question, both of you.
Question on in halacha?
That's
asur. Can't do that. In halacha, you're not allowed to do that.
You're in a jam and you have one rabbi available in front of you. So you ask him that question.
No.
But then you ask your regular rabbi, the same question.
Like I'm right now, let's say. Hashkafa shul and hashkafa yad. This question that occurred to me right now.
Okay.
But then you ask your real rabbi next week, and he says it was a asur mutar.
I wouldn't say your real rabbi, your usual rabbi. That's not the, anyway, the kitzur, in general, the title rabbi is very, very, very broad in America, and it doesn't really mean much. Just like there used to be a saying in America a long time ago, the proof is in the pudding. A rabbi's proof is in his pudding. Stand for what you are, let's see you. You know, where's your Chochmat HaTorah? Where's your Derech Eretz? How's your Yirat Shamayim? Who vouches for you? The proof is in the pudding. You know what I'm saying? Titles are a dime a dozen. Harav, Agaon, Amufle, Rabban, Chilkol, Bnei, Hagula. Titles are meaningless. We live in a generation
where...
I know, but I'm saying titles in this generation don't really mean much. The most important thing is, not results even, but Tachlis. Yeah? What? Tachlis, that's the real thing. Hey, say Tachlis in Persian. The tachlis, the real thing. Let's see, Rabotai. That's the most important. So you can have multiple rebbeim in that situation. If your regular rav says otherwise, and you can read, okay, say that, then you can rely on your regular rav, and that's it. But in general, that's another thing. People go rabbi shopping. You know, that's isur chamur lefi halacha, isur gamur mamash. You're not allowed to do that. If you look in Shulchan Aruch Yored Asiman Shmen Bet, over there it says mforash. You're not allowed to do it. You can't go rabbi hopping, rabbi shopping, looking for heterim or whatever. It's asur to do that. Not only that, many times what people do, I'll tell you what people do sometimes. Sometimes they ask the question to two rabbanim, not because they necessarily want to do rabbi shopping, because they want to stir the pot. Oh, I know, but this rabbi said this, and this rabbi said this. They're mamash, they try to be like Datan v'Aviram in order to create... That's also another. This happens to me all the time. I don't fall into the trap anymore. But people do this. Oh, but this one said this. But this one said that because they want to hear. Oh, they want to create internal. You know, for one rub to say the other one's wrong. You'd be surprised. There's a lot of craziness in Am Yisrael today, in the world. But there's a lot of crazy stuff. to try to do the Ritzon Hashem, Kirtzon Hashem. Ritzon Hashem, the way Hashem has it in mind. Rabotai, I end with this. We didn't get to the halachot that I wanted to do today, but I think I gave you a real basis, a real foundation for true hashkafa in Torah and Mitzvot as it applies today. Don't get sucked in to any other, you know, artificial Judaism. Real, authentic Judaism is what I told you. What I said. That's listen to this again and again in Duchazara. Because the temptations of falling for, you know, bootleg Judaism today and all sorts of junk food and stuff like that, very big temptations. Very, very big. Because it's easy. It doesn't require, usually those kind, the people who get suckered into these things, there's no real learning required. There's no real commitment required. You don't really have to do much. You just believe and think and listen to, you know, and then that's your life. There's no shortcuts in Judaism. You need to have a Rebbe. You need to learn daily. You need to daven daily. You need to practice. You need to learn Musar and practice that Musar and have tremendous Hirat Shamayim. There's no shortcuts in Judaism. There's only one real McCoy, and that's the way to do it. Anybody who tells you otherwise is a faker. Navi Shekir Mamash. That's the way it works. You have to know. V'kachazin. And when the Chachamim said, Asel l'charav v'istalik min asafek, they said it very, you know, they meant it, and you have to do your research. Not everybody. There's many people who are ra'ui. You got to find the right one. It's a shidduch, like any other. Just like any, you know, to find the right doctor, to find the right lawyer, to find the right, is it, you know, it takes time. Finding the right one is important, and it takes time, and it takes, you know, it takes research, and it's okay. Just to answer his question from before, you don't have to be so blunt about it, but you could. There's no problem with asking, where'd you come from? What's your background? Where'd you learn? You know what I'm saying? Because many times there are people that shouldn't, you know, and they, these people can mess people's lives up so much. I've seen it so many times, and it's such a chaval. Rabbi Isai, I leave you at that. Shavua tov, tizkor shem rabot, na'imot v'tovot. I must leave a drop early today because lichvoda shel Torah, Rav Amar, the Rishon Lezion, is in Great Neck today, and they invited me to a special meeting with him. So just as much as I love to teach Torah, but also showing kavod la Torah is also quite important. So I have to make an appearance, and Bezat Hashem, we will revisit the halachot next week. כל טוב, שבוע טוב. רבי חנן בן הקשה אומר, יצא הקדוש ברוך הוא לזכות את ישראל, לפיכך רבנן בין המצוות שנאמר, אדוני חפץ למען צדקו, יגדיל תורה וידיר.